By the way, in case you haven't heard, my brand new book, Feel Good Productivity, is now out. It is available everywhere books are sold, and it's actually hit the New York Times and also the Sunday Times bestseller list. So thank you to everyone who's already got a copy of the book. If you've read the book already, I would love a review on Amazon. And if you haven't yet checked it out, you may like to check it out. It's available in physical format and also ebook and also audiobook everywhere books are sold. In case you haven't heard, my brand new book, Feel Good Productivity, is now out, and it's actually a New York Times and also Sunday Times bestseller. So if you've ordered a copy, thank you so much. If you've read the book already, I'd love it if you could leave a review on Amazon. And if you haven't yet checked out the book, you might like to consider checking it out. This is the final bonus episode of Deep Dive, where we come to the final snippet of Feel Good Productivity, a short segment from chapter 9 of the audiobook. This chapter is all about why doing what matters to you is the ultimate energizer and productivity booster, and how you can find what matters to you. To understand this, let's listen to a story about a group of hikers. The Pacific Crest Trail is not for the faint of heart. Spanning 2,650 miles of mountainous terrain in the western United States, it encompasses the entire latitude of America, from the deserts at the Mexican border to the mountains of North Washington. It's renowned as one of the most arduous and sometimes dangerous hiking trails in America. Every summer, thousands of intrepid walkers set off on the trail, beginning in spring and knowing that they won't arrive at the Canadian border until 5 months later. For most people, this sounds like a hellish feat of endurance. For University of Missouri professor Kenan Sheldon, it sounded like a perfect opportunity for a psychological experiment. Sheldon is a titanic figure in a recent wave of research into human motivation. At the turn of the millennium, many people thought that the great questions about motivation had been resolved. As we learned in part one, since the 1970s, scientists had been aware of the two types of motivation, intrinsic and extrinsic. Intrinsic motivation is where you're doing something because it feels inherently enjoyable. Extrinsic motivation is where you're doing something because of an external reward, like making money or winning a prize. In the years since these two forms of motivation were theorized, countless studies have shown that when we're intrinsically motivated to do something, we're more effective and energized by doing it, and that extrinsic rewards can, in the long run, make us less motivated to do something for its own sake. Intrinsic motivation equals good, extrinsic equals bad, and that was that. Except Sheldon had a hunch that things might be a bit more complicated. Starting in the 1990s, he started to wonder whether we were missing something crucial about the science of motivation. Yes, on the face of it, the evidence seemed clear that extrinsic motivation was worse than intrinsic motivation. At the same time, though, our lives are filled with instances in which we clearly are motivated by extrinsic rewards, and motivated well. Imagine a student, let's call her Katniss, studying for exams. Katniss doesn't enjoy the studying process itself, so her motivation to study isn't intrinsic. For now, she's motivated by something other than the pure joy of studying and learning. How might Katniss be motivating herself to study? Here are some options. Option A, I'm studying because my parents are forcing me to. I hate this subject, but if I don't pass, I'll be grounded for a month. I need to study to avoid this terrible punishment. Option B, I'm studying out of a sense of guilt. I hate this subject, but I know that my parents have worked hard to send me to this school, and I know I should value the opportunity to do well so that I can get into a good college. I feel anxious and guilty when I'm not studying, so I'm putting in a few hours of work each night for this exam. And option C, I'm studying because I genuinely care about doing well in school. Yes, I hate this subject, but I have to pass this exam to qualify for the classes I actually want to take next year. And I'm trying to do well in those because I really want to go to college, to broaden my horizons, and maybe even apply to medical school someday. My parents aren't forcing me to do any of this. Yes, they'll be disappointed if I fail, but I'm not studying for them. I'm studying for me. All three of these options would fall under the category of extrinsic motivation. In each case, Katniss isn't studying because it's inherently enjoyable. Instead, she's studying to achieve some external outcome, avoiding punishment, eliminating guilt, or getting into her desired classes. But clearly, these three options represent very different attitudes towards work and life. Option C might even be quite a healthy form of motivation, one that encourages Katniss to work towards goals she values, even if the process isn't intrinsically pleasurable. Katniss's example demonstrates that, in fact, not all extrinsic motivation is inherently bad. Like Katniss studying for the subject she hates, we all have to do things we don't enjoy at times. And even when we start off enjoying something, if we do it for long enough, there are always going to be periods of hardship. In these moments, it's rarely helpful to be told that if only we were enjoying ourselves more, we'd be able to persevere. Which brings us back to Sheldon and the Pacific Crest Trail. He began to suspect that anyone who embarked on the PCT was pretty likely to experience a collapse in intrinsic motivation at some point. What was motivating them to continue, he wondered. So he decided to test it out. In 2018, Sheldon recruited a group of people who were interested in hiking the PCT. This group represented a mix of abilities. 7 had never backpacked before, 37 had backpacked a few times, 46 had backpacked quite a lot, and 4 had done it all their life. Before the hike started, Sheldon measured their motivation by getting participants to rate the accuracy of the following statements, each measuring a different type of motivation. I am hiking the PCT because... Hiking the PCT will be interesting. Hiking the PCT is personally important to me. I want to feel proud of myself. I will feel like a failure if I didn't hike the PCT. Important people will like me better if I complete the PCT. Honestly, I don't know why I'm hiking the PCT. These are all the options that they had, and they had to rate them as part of the questionnaire. When Sheldon looked at the data, he found that practically all the hikers saw drops in intrinsic motivation during the marathon hike. This isn't surprising. When you're walking 2,650 miles across freezing terrain over 5 months, it's hard to genuinely enjoy every step. Sheldon was more interested in the form of extrinsic motivation the hikers turned to when their intrinsic motivation inevitably declined. By 2017, many scientists had begun to suspect that, as with Katniss studying for her exams, there were three discrete types of extrinsic motivation in addition to the purely intrinsic form. They fall on a spectrum called the Relative Autonomy Continuum, or RAC. So going from less autonomous to more autonomous, we start off with, firstly, external motivation. I'm doing this because important people will like and respect me more if I do. People who highly rated this statement have high external motivation. Secondly, we have introjected motivation. I'm doing this because I'll feel guilty or bad about myself if I don't. People who highly rated this statement have high introjected motivation. Thirdly, we have identified motivation. I'm doing this because I truly value the goal it's helping me work towards. People who highly rated this statement have high identified motivation. And fourthly, we have intrinsic motivation. I'm doing this because I love the process as an end in itself. And people who highly rated this statement have high intrinsic motivation. We can plot these four forms on a spectrum from less to more autonomous. And in the supplementary PDF, there is a little diagram. So this is kind of complicated, but I'm going to try and explain it. So basically, imagine a spectrum from less autonomous to more autonomous, and there's like a line with arrows on either end, specifying less autonomous and more autonomous. And then along that spectrum, you've got four discrete areas. So on the less autonomous end, you have external motivation. Moving along, you have introjected motivation. Moving along, you have identified motivation. And then at the end, which is the most autonomous form of motivation, you have intrinsic motivation. So we have external, introjected, identified, and intrinsic. And you don't need to remember these, but we are going to be visiting them time and again in this chapter, so you may like to look at the supplementary PDF for this chapter in particular. External motivation is the form of extrinsic motivation that's the least autonomous. Instead of us being motivated by any kind of internal force, we're being controlled by the opinions, rules, and rewards offered by others. Further along the spectrum, identified motivation is the most autonomous form of extrinsic motivation. Even though we might be doing something for the external reward associated with it, we value that reward or end goal. And crucially, that value was determined by us, not foisted upon us by others. Using this framework, Sheldon spotted something fascinating about the PCT hikers. The best predictor of their performance was the specific kind of extrinsic motivation they drew upon when their intrinsic motivation waned. Using the data he collected on the hikers' motivation, well-being, and hike performance, he showed that those who had higher levels of both introjected and identified motivation were far more likely to complete the trail. They managed to tap into these forms of extrinsic motivation to help sustain their progress even when the going got tough. At the same time, Sheldon asked each of the walkers about their mood on the hike using a series of well-established tests for subjective well-being, SWB, which is psychology jargon for happiness. Therein lay his second intriguing insight. The only type of extrinsic motivation that corresponded with greater happiness was identified motivation. In other words, it was the hikers who motivated themselves by aligning their actions with what they truly valued who not only completed the trail, but also felt happiest at the end of it. Sheldon didn't use the term, but you might say that these hikers were experiencing feel-good productivity. This study hints at our final insight into reducing our risk of burnout. So far, we've explored how to avoid what I call overexertion burnouts, which arise from taking on too much, and depletion burnouts, which arise from working too hard. But there's a third kind of burnout, one that I call misalignment burnout. Misalignment burnout arises from the negative feelings that arise when our goals don't match up to our sense of self. We feel worse and so achieve less because we're not acting authentically. In these moments, our behavior is driven by external forces rather than by a deeper alignment between who we are and what we're doing. This alignment is something that only intrinsic and identified motivation can offer. The solution: to work out what really matters to you and align your behavior with it. It's a transformative method, one that can make us feel fundamentally better about our lives. We've already explored that we all have to do things we don't like and that others expect of us. I don't particularly enjoy taking my car to get serviced, or cleaning the toilet, or filing my taxes. In these moments, we might not enjoy the task we're undertaking, and that can drain our energy. But we can sustain our feel-good productivity by aligning our present-day actions with a deeper sense of self. I hope you enjoyed that little snippet of my brand new book, Feel Good Productivity. I had so much fun recording the audiobook in a studio in London. It was a lot of hard work, but quite a lot of fun. And so if you fancy listening to the entire book, it is available to purchase wherever audiobooks are sold. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of Deep Dive.